Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 59 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And today we've got a special cantina conversation with some nerd friends here, and we're going to see where this conversation takes us.
Yeah, we have JD Oliva from Superhero Speak Podcast and our old friend, regular Scott from Take a Knee for Marvel versus DC. Say what's up, guys.
What is going on, everybody? Glad to be back. Hopefully I come out with just a couple less bruises than last time.
Put your dukes up, motherfucker. Put your dukes up.
Hey, if you're looking to represent that, yeah. So regular Scott was on, had a Fight Me Friday, right? That was the Fight Me Friday for for our take on Endgame. And yeah, I'll just say it was a unanimous decision there.
I thought this was just going to be some friendly sparring. Instead, I got jumped. That's what happened.
Well, I am from Chicago. I don't know what to tell you. we've been talking back and forth with our podcast friends, and we wanted to give JD an opportunity to promote his books. And Scott and JD also have a new podcast that they just started for the wrestling community, all our wrestling nerds, called Showdown Pro Wrestling Podcast. So we wanted to have a few minutes to have them on, promote some cool things going on in the nerd culture, and then just kind of let it unfold into a typical nerd conversation. So we'll get started with JD. Why don't you let them know a little bit about conspiracy theory and your background as an author?
So I'm JD Oliva. I've been a writer for probably about 10, 12 years, something like that. I started in comics, and about 2 years ago, I made the commitment to move over to prose work, to novels full time. And I had my first book. It's called Hawk Hollow, come out in 2018. Let's just say this. It's not done really great. So I had to sit and really go to school and learn how to do this. And I committed to understanding the business side of being an independent writer, because quite frankly, that's where the money is being made by new writers. It's not being done in the big publishing house. It's being done by the guys self-publishing and doing the work like we do. Like, you're out there, you're doing your work on your own. You're promoting your own work. And that's for the guys who are making the money right now. So I took my time, and I really just started, like, for real, getting into this game in September. And I had my first two books come out, Conspiracy Theory and Harvest Moon, were my first two books. They came out a week apart. I write, the majority of my work right now has been in the supernatural thriller / horror genre. Conspiracy Theory, it's a free book, actually. It's available at Book Funnel. It's a great way for me to kind of build my brand by saying, here's what I do. Here's my characters. Check this free novella out.
Yeah, every good dealer gives the first hit out. For
absolutely.
Free.
So yeah, I give out the book, and then I introduce you to Ethan Jericho, my lead character. It's basically like, what if John Wick worked the X-Files, is the way I kind of like to talk about him. So he's an assassin who keeps getting himself sucked into these supernatural dealings. And he actually started out as a side character in my book Harvest Moon, which is pretty much a police procedural werewolf story. Like, it's about a guy who's investigating a serial killer who turns out to be a werewolf, and then it turns out to be him.
So are we considering this one overall universe?
It's one universe. Like, I do kind of do the Stephen King thing where all my stuff, it kind of lies in the same world, but they don't necessarily, and not everything necessarily touches each other. So yeah, those are my two big books, Harvest Moon and Conspiracy Theory. And then in October and November, I released The Devil's Prayer, which is my sequel story to Conspiracy Theory, and Nightcrawler, which is the third chapter in the books of Jericho. Snowblind, the next one, comes out in 2 weeks. And the goal is to put out 15 novels in the year 2020.
Now it's all making sense, because as you're saying, like, the release dates, and I'm thinking, man, that's a lot of, I can't send that many emails in a 2 month span. And somehow you've pumped up about five novels, I think you just rattled off, and really since September. And then you're looking at, you said 15 in 2020.
Well, the key is I didn't start doing it in September. Like, I started,
yeah, no,
I've been doing this on my own, stockpiling books for about a year. Okay. So I get a draft done, I move on to the next one, and then I come back and tweak it a little bit, because every time you write, you get better. So I've had, so I sat on Harvest Moon for about 2 years, but I'd come back to it and I'd make it better and I make it flush into this world a little bit better. So the current version we have out is actually doing pretty decently. That's that's my big book right now. It sells pretty well on Amazon. I'm really happy about it. The other books kind of spin off from there and it's working. And this series is good. And I'm going to branch out into another series coming up in early spring. We'll see how that one goes. But yeah, the point is to put out as much as possible. And I write one book, send it off to the editor, start another one. As we talk about
how this, how has switching formats from comics to novels kind of worked for you? Do you find it's kind of like unleashed a kind of literary demon in you? That's why you're able to like pound these out, or because I know you have to outline comics a lot different. A lot of the way comic books, you know, is a lot different than novels.
Yes and no. I'm an Andy Schmidt guy. That's comics experience. Some of you guys that might pay attention to what kind of goes on. Like Andy Schmidt runs like the premier comics, independent, well, not even independent, but just premier comics courses online. And everything I learned about writing, I pretty much learned from Andy. So my sensibilities are very comics based. And, I outline very similar to how I do a comic. My novels tend to be more dialogue driven. And I don't want to say sparse, but a typical novel for me is about 60,000 words, you know, which is not short, but it's not super long. Like I still have that in comics, like when you're doing the panel description, you want to get to the point, like you want to make it as concise as possible. And those sensibilities have really carried over into my novel writing. So like, I don't dance around a lot of things. Like I don't want to say get to the point, but I mean like my work is laser focused. I like to think. And what
you don't take 3 pages to describe a mountain.
No, I do not actually. I couldn't do it if I tried. Like that's the critique I get on my books a lot is like, man, this stuff moves fast. And I get that from comics. And one trick I learned from Andy Schmidt always talk about the page turn, like at the bottom corner of the page, you want to incite the readers to turn the page. And when I was, I brought that into novels. So every time I end a chapter, I try to end it on something of a cliffhanger or a question. Like I'm trying to motivate the reader to move on. Cause in Kindle Unlimited, that's where I'm making my money. Like I got to give them a reason to keep reading cause they can move on to another book at any time.
Yeah. We interviewed another comic author a little while back, Ryan Hawk. And he also took comics experience. He talked kind of similar in that, you know, really taking a lot from that course, taking a lot from kind of understanding page turners and stuff like that. And with the novel, it's interesting because does it hurt your soul a little bit to not see, you know, what your storytelling, not seeing it in that visual form, not seeing Jericho out there, John Wickens in actual panels? Or
no, because my experience in comics was very frustrating. Like I ran my first Kickstarter campaign in 2011 and it worked, it went pretty good, but it took 2 years to get the book done, and that kind of really derailed anything. And it wasn't me, it was my artist. Was, you know, he comes and says, hey, I got a project with Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson. Hey, I got a project coming along with Corey Taylor. Can you wait? And what am I going to say? Because I'm paying him chump change. I go, okay.
Say no, motherfucker. Oh, well, say no.
And again, I'm too nice. Maybe I'm too nice a guy, but I mean, it worked. And then I ran another Kickstarter in 2017, after working with Tyler James from Comics Tribe, learned a ton about how to run Kickstarters, and my artist flaked on me. And it's just like, it got to the point where I had all this stuff and I went, I mean, I'll tell you guys this. I was recruited by a very good editor at a very name company who had a really cool creator owned imprint that no longer exists. And I went back and forth with them for a year on one book, and he shepherded me along and taught me a ton of great stuff. And when I was time to bring it to the publisher went, I don't like it. So I got to me where I was like, I knew it was going to happen. I said, you know, the odds of this happening are slim. I have one book in Deluge, my first book, won a bunch of indie awards and stuff like that. It was really cool. Didn't make any money, which is fine. That's what you're taught in independent comics. It's all about building the brand. It's all about trying to get the editors to notice you. And that wasn't happening for me. And I got just frustrated with not being in control of my career and in control of my stories. With novels, I mean, I'm in control.
I would say it's self-publishing nowadays. It's it's fairly easy, low barriers to self-publishing, well, being able to print on demand through Amazon.
The internet has really kind of made everybody be able to go the Master P route, right?
Absolutely.
Like everybody can sell a mixtape out the trunk now with the internet and hit strike gold if you have good quality,
if you're good,
that people want. Right. Yeah. You know, and, like the cream rises to
the
top.
And that's the thing right now is you're fighting because there's literally millions of books on Amazon. How do you stand out? And that's why I'm taking the business end of it seriously. Like I take my email list seriously. Like I have an ARC reading team with the people actually read my books before I put them out. Like I talk with them. Like I have my own social media, like a author page on Facebook where I'm trying to engage readers. Like you have to do the extra work. Like talent is easy. That's a wrestling thing. You know, just having talent isn't enough. You have to be willing to do the extra work. And I got a 4-year-old at home and I got tired of trying to make something happen. Now I'm making something happen. I'm busting my ass to put out these books, to put out enough quality. And I'm not gonna say, man, I wish I had tried a little bit harder.
Well, that's partly why I like doing these interviews and having creators on is you know, we've had a few on for our Cantina Conversations, and that's the overall theme is if you want something, go after it, work hard, put your nose to the grindstone and get it done. Like no one's going to hold your hand. No one's going to walk you through it. You're not just going to have a great idea and poof, it becomes something. Like these conversations that we have with creators are always inspiring. And we hope our audience takes away, you know, that lesson every time we do one of these.
Yeah, because I enjoy listening to people, not like me, but people who talk about their process and their journey and how they've gotten their work done. And I've had a lot of friends coming up through Comics Experience. They've had like super varying levels of success, like guys that are really busting their ass on the indie side of it. And then I have friends that are writing for Marvel and DC and are successful. So, I mean, it's awesome. And everybody's got their own path. And this is the one that I feel most connected to. Like, I feel like I'm doing work, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm the little guy sleeping upstairs right now is what motivates me. And I can't screw up. I have to make it work.
Well, yeah, you have a lot of, what do they call it? A lot of something on the fire. Yeah. You know, you got your writings, you got your Superhero Speak podcast. What are you guys doing over there at Superhero Speak?
Oh, I jumped on with Superhero Speak about 2 years ago. I'm not gonna lie. It was an effort to build my brand, to build my awareness. This is kind of when I was still trying to work in comics. And I just fell in love with Dave and John, my two co-hosts, like as far as like the time we spend together. And they're older than me. So they have a little bit more of that Gen X mindset when it comes to comics. So I like to come in and from a little bit more of a creative perspective, a little bit of a younger perspective and challenge them. But it's fun. We say what kind of stuff. We talk about nerd culture and comics and comic movies and what's going on with that kind of stuff. And it's a good time. I enjoy what we do.
And then thirdly, you hang out with a mutual friend of ours. Regular Scott from Taken E versus Marvel versus DC.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about a mutual friend. That beating I took. I think we're at the acquaintance part right now.
Mutual adversary.
Yes, mutual adversary.
And JD was first brought to my attention when he was on your show, you know, promoting his works and things like that. And then since then, I think you guys hit some kind of bro love talking about wrestling. Yeah. And now pivoted into your own show that you guys do for basically the wrestling update show, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it started out where I think we have a segment on our show called Social Media Madness where Dave will just read off people who respond to our Twitter. And it's normally gut-wrenchingly awful just reading these horrible takes. And Scott said something in one of them. And I think I made a remark about I didn't understand what the hashtag meant. And he responded and then we just started following each other and talking. And I'm like, I like this guy. This guy's got cool takes on things. And I started listening to their show. And I'm like, hey, I love this show. This is like our I said it on Superhero Speak. I'm like, their show's like ours, but they're like cool. Like, and then Scott would have Scott and I have a very different relationship when it comes to pro wrestling. I think he'll agree with that. He's a WWE fan, and I hate it with virtually every fiber of my being.
It's not that bad.
So it depends on the day.
That's true.
Scott is the most
Wednesdays
positive.
Are solid.
Scott, yeah, Wednesdays are good. I'll give you that. Scott is the most positive wrestling fan in all of Twitter. If you want to be sucked into a mire of like self-hating, just miserable people, check out wrestling Twitter. It'll always make you feel terrible.
I think the internet has a lot of those corners. If you really want to feel bad about yourself, there's plenty of places on the internet to do that.
No, you're right. And so I had JD on the show for one of our open mic segments that we do. And we started talking about wrestling, and we probably went on for about wrestling for about 45 minutes, at least, just going back and forth. And my co-host probably said about 5 words at that point, because he doesn't even know how to spell the word wrestling. So it was just a whole different conversation for him. And then after that, you know, we just kind of talked, and like, you know, we had a good chemistry going. We had very opposite views, but both were kind of in the mindset of like, oh, that's a good point. You know what I mean? Kind of understanding the other side of it. And we decided to try our hand at a show. We liked the results, and that's how the Showdown Pro Wrestling Podcast came about.
So it's odd that JD, because as we were getting ready for the show, you had mentioned we're the same age, about, you know, I'll be 40 at the end of the year. But you are anti WWE. So are you lean more towards the new up and comers, the AEWs, the New Japan wrestling? Is that where you put your stock at now?
Now, yeah. I'm a big fan of the old school stuff. Like, I really like 80s and 90s pro wrestling. Like old WCW Nitro was probably my favorite thing in the world, but I'm a big AEW fan. I'm not a blind fan. I'm willing to critique them when they do something wrong. And I do worship at the altar of Gato, the greatest wrestling mind of the 21st century. New Japan Pro Wrestling is the greatest pro wrestling promotion in the world. Scott, you cannot argue with me on this one.
I don't. Yeah. I give you that one.
It's the best. But yeah, that's kind of where my head's at. Like, I have a love-hate relationship with the WWE, and it's been like that since I was 12, when I'll go on streaks where I'm really happy with what they're doing, and then I'll just hate them for a long time, and then I'll get back into them again, and then I'll hate them again. And it's been like this my whole life. So I'm currently in a "God, I hate this promotion" phase. I'm sure I'll come out of it at some point, but right now I'm not happy with it.
Yeah, see, I stopped watching wrestling probably in 2003, 2002, 2003.
So did everybody.
But for a long for a long time there, I was roommates with an old buddy from high school, and we would have a Monday night Raw like party, like pony keg in the bathtub. Everyone comes over. We would tape Nitro and watch Raw live, and then watch like so. Just to give everyone a reference, this is still VHS. Like, when I say tape, I'm not talking DVRs. I'm talking
a tape
recorded on actual magnetic tape. And then I actually have the pictures. One day we had a party where you couldn't get in unless you dressed like a wrestler.
That's awesome.
So I have this picture of everybody drinking draft beer from the bathtub, drunk as shit. I was dressed as, I think, Disco Inferno. Just to give everyone a point of reference. So it was some great times. But yeah, after a while, wrestling kind of just, it took a lull, and I got too old. I couldn't get back into it.
It's funny you say 02, 03, because that was probably about the time I started getting into wrestling. Is it probably about that time, which is weird, because that's kind of when everything was on the downward swing.
Yeah, that's when Rock was leaving, Stone Cold was leaving, everybody was kind of...
And the guy that did it was Shelton Benjamin. He won me over. I saw one match of his, and I was like, all right, I'm watching just to see this guy every week.
What kept me going, though, was ECW was up and coming then. I went to a Chicago's show for ECW where I was second row on camera. And what made me truly appreciate professional wrestling was the fact that I watched Rhino pile drive someone through a table onto the floor on the outside of the ring. Literally almost got kicked in the head by this dude. And when I looked at him and they hit the floor, I realized they hit the same floor I'm standing on. There's like no extra matting next to the ring. There was no, you know, safety precautions whatsoever. I was like, that dude just went through a table with his head and landed on the same floor I'm standing on right now. Like, mad love, man. Mad love. And I just like, for the rest of my life, I may not be into it, but I'll always have a certain level of respect for professional wrestling.
Small world. I was at that show too.
The Chicago show?
Yes, I was.
Sandman came out. I think Sandman came out at the end, throwing beer everywhere with his like bamboo stick or sword or whatever. Yeah, bamboo I was getting lit. Boy, I was hammered. I was like 22. They're like, "You want to go to this wrestling show?" I was like, "Yup." And it was that was my wrestling career ended then. But my close friend was actually stayed into wrestling, and he went to AEW's All In, and that really kind of revitalized a love for wrestling that he had. What they're doing with AEW and this New Japan, he said, is just like totally revitalizing wrestling. They're innovative, they're doing things that no one's done before, and they have just a real respect for the craft.
I was also at that show too. I was lucky enough to go to AEW to All In, and I was same. I fell out of love with pro wrestling in 2004. I got to the WrestleMania with Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, and that was when I faded out for a few years, and I would check back in periodically. And I think what really did me in was that there was no real competition, you know, because even then New Japan wasn't great until like 2011, 2012, you know. What really got me back into it was, I'll give credit, Daniel Bryan and WWE. I was actually looking at my Facebook memory things, and it was actually like 6-7 years ago today. I was sitting in a hotel in Boston looking for something to watch and came upon Raw. I was like, oh, I haven't really watched a Raw in a long time. And I was back in.
That's what happens. It sucks you back in every once in a while. It's, you know, it's the male soap opera.
Oh, it totally is.
You know, like Young and the Restless has been on forever. And I, you know, the Housewives, they fall in and out of the characters and in and out of the storylines. It's the same thing with dudes in wrestling. You get in and out of it. And, you know, but the All In show, and they did a second one in Chicago that was kind of like All In. What was that
All
one
out.
Called? Yeah, All Out. My buddy went to that one too. And like I said, he spoke really highly of the, what they're attempting to do. You know, it's not easy to take on the rivals in McMahon's, and what they're doing to take them on is actually pretty, pretty special.
So. I think that's why I like AEW, is because I share that spirit, that do it yourself, go out there, make your own breaks, kick ass on your own. You don't have the machine behind you. So I feel a kindred spirit with that promotion. When it doesn't go right, I get a little frustrated, but like
they got a little bit of the machine behind them now.
Oh, now they do. As of today, yeah. That machine is firmly behind them. But isn't that what we all want is to become the machine? Isn't that everyone's secret dream? It's to become your own machine.
You got to get that driving force behind you. And
well,
now
with a,
I think they
with
can,
a competitive AEW, it makes everybody else better, right? Like if Vince McMahon is just living in his own bubble and he doesn't really have to put out great product because he's the only product, wrestling suffers as a whole, you know. But the minute an AEW comes in and raises the bar a little, it makes, you know, all those that everybody at WWE kind of shake the dust off and get back to trying to put together a really good product.
And the best part is that the guys are getting paid a lot more. Like, they're the ones that have felt the immediate impact of it. Guys are getting paid sometimes double what they had in the last contracts just to kind of keep people where they belong, where they quote unquote belong. Like, so everyone's winning on this. Everyone's making money. It's a good time. It's a good time to get back into pro wrestling, actually. If anyone's ever thought about it, it's a good time to do it.
A few of those guys are getting a little overpaid, but you know, that's how it goes when you want to keep people from the competition. They don't like WWE signing people that they're not even going to use just so other companies like AEW can't get them.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old trick.
It's a talent. It's a good time to be talent. Maybe not to be management, but it's a good time to be talent.
Well, you got a lot more to wager with. You know, you can bargain a lot more, even against, you know, AEW and some of these smaller companies. Like even against New Japan, you can probably bargain a little bit and maybe get a little bit more than what you would, you know, beforehand.
Well, and I know because of the competition now for talent and what's come out with, you know, head injuries in football and what are happening to a lot of these retired wrestlers, that you're starting to kind of see almost like a union mindset starting to form at a lot of these foundations, you know, so that, you know, they're all considered independent contractors, right? All these wrestlers. So they're not entitled to any kind of like benefits or anything like that. And from what I've been told, that the competition now is starting to sweeten benefit packages and move things more towards a employer based kind of like how sports is now. There's going to be, you know, a players association. Hopefully eventually there'll be a wrestlers association.
I hope that's where we're moving. Like AEW is a little bit more of a true word, not really true independent contractor situation, because they do allow their talent to work outside the company. WWE absolutely does not. There's a wrestler on the indies by the name of David Starr, who is, to be frank, a radical leftist who's working with Equity in the UK to try to actually build a real pro wrestling union. He's got a big uphill climb to make it work, but this dude's out there banging the drums, trying to get wrestlers to understand their value and to create that real wrestling union. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but now's a better time than ever to make an attempt.
Well, and the science is in now too. So we see that the hits these guys are taking.
For real.
I mean, it was pretty apparent before, but if it wasn't, now there's actually some data behind it. And what we know about CTE and what we've seen tragically happen to some former wrestlers, I think people are starting to think long-term as to where they weren't thinking about that in the 80s and 90s.
There's a Mexican pro wrestler by the name of La Parca who had an accident in the ring a couple months ago and just passed away last week from that. So, I mean, it's real life, man. These things are real. People are really throwing their bodies.
Yeah, it's rough, you know, and you see the, you know, especially from our childhood, you watch the Jake the Snake documentaries. Okay. And you know, you see those things and it just kind of, yeah, it puts a real somber tone to what, especially as a child, you just kind of looked at as this glorified, you know, machismo soap opera. and then you see the dark curtain get pulled away and you realize like, no, there's got to be something more to this.
Well, it's and you know, speaking of kind of like tragic wrestlers, Chris Benoit's son, he just did an interview where he says he wants to wrestle and use the name Chris Benoit Jr. And that's just, you know, that's something that you're not going to be able to do because of some of the, you know, because of what you're talking about, some of the injuries that he's taken, you know, kind of mushed his brain.
That's a tragic story in itself, just because when Benoit, for those that don't know, he was a murder suicide and he killed majority of his family. That was before CTE came out, you know, and everyone just thought like it was this anger, you know, roided up dude went kind of apeshit on his family. But now that we know the science and realize, you know, what happens, his name does deserve some redemption, you know, and some empathy.
It's hard. I don't think you can use that name on a national stage. I can't see somebody promoting it.
I've had this conversation with my buddy Stu, and yeah, I don't know. I think that you have to side with science on this, and
you know, you don't.
There's a lot of
I don't know,
football players that committed suicide. It's a disease. You don't.
If it was just a suicide, I think that'd be one thing. You know, but it's the murder suicide that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but you can't. We can maybe, you know, in a closed conversation, be, you know, slightly empathetic and just be like, okay, we can understand, hey, maybe there were some additional factors in there. But the end result remains the same. And you can't associate that name. No company is going to allow this guy to wrestle under that name. I get it. Man, it is never going to happen.
No. But I do think he should be allowed, like he should be given a fresh start, you know, being like he shouldn't have to worry about that affecting him under a different name. You know what I mean?
I agree. I don't think he should be judged by his father's crimes.
No, but I think he should go to a trade school and just like, let's walk away from
there's
this.
There's a lot of people that
think, let's get some distance.
There's
here.
A lot of people that think the way you do. There's a lot of people that are under that mind. But I mean, this guy is trying to reconcile heinous crimes of his father. And I think, quite frankly, I think it's a lot of talk. Because if you look at the guy, he does not look like he's ready to start pro wrestling. Very few people start professional wrestling at the age of 27. Like, I think it's a lot. I think he'd like to do this. I think in his head he's going to do this, but he hasn't. I don't think it's ever going to happen, to be honest with you.
See, I empathize. It was a tragedy. It was a major tragedy. But as like you had said it, you know, the crimes, like to me, it almost feels like a tragedy as in like a car crash. You know what I mean? Like this dude was beat in the fucking head for years and years and years and was left to just cope with something that nobody understood, and it ended in tragedy. Like I don't honestly look at dude as this heinous criminal.
All right. Well, then whether OJ did it or not, that dude got his head beat in too. So he gets a pass.
OJ good.
No, it doesn't matter though. He also took a bunch of blows in the head.
Invoking OJ he's right good. Off the bat. We're just going to invoke OJ.
Oh yeah. Come on, man. OJ did that. There's no question about that.
But I'm saying even if he did, he had countless, I'm sure, micro concussions and stuff as a running back in the NFL. Like you can't give people a pass because of, you know, TBI or traumatic brain injury type,
this is the same discussion we have when we discuss like the Joker movie, you know, so you don't excuse the villain, but to understand it and to have empathy or compassion for it, isn't this the same thing?
Sure. But when we're talking about, does he give a pass? Does this name get to necessarily get, you know, redeemed in, you know, the industry again, and does it actually have a place there? No, it doesn't. It still doesn't. Like we can no longer vilify him as this heinous monster. We can maybe have a you know, a more sophisticated approach towards saying like, okay, there were factors that we didn't know, and there was depression, and there was things associated with his profession that we didn't know. Still, outcome doesn't change.
I'm with you on that because like every criminal has a story. And I think it's safe to say that the vast majority of serial killers have something wrong with them or some, you know, dark history. I don't think you can excuse the crime, but I don't think you should ignore the reasons behind it either. You know, I don't think that we need to redeem Chris Benoit to let David Benoit have a chance at seeing a dream come true, at following a dream, you know?
Well, then David Benoit shouldn't also be punished for something that we should at least have a certain level of understanding for.
I agree with that, but I don't think he should.
That's my basic point.
He just shouldn't use Chris Benoit Jr. like he's talking about wanting to use. I don't think he can use the Benoit name at all.
That's kind of shitty. Yeah. Like it's like, you know,
I mean, you're right, but I don't think you can.
It's your family name. It's your family name. You know, they dropped Bret Hart, or they dropped what's his name Hart from
Owen Hart
from the rafters onto a turnbuckle, and they didn't. They'll still milk that Hart name.
That's true.
I mean that's drastically different, right? That was that's so far different, different than what we're describing here.
I'm just saying, like there was a tragic wrestling death that WWE doesn't want to remind anybody about, but they didn't outlaw the Hart name to save face.
Well, and
to not remind people of a horrific accident.
And this
death.
Is where I get this is where I start getting like my WWE frustrations come from. Is Jimmy Snuka killed a woman in the mid-80s? Superfly Jimmy Snuka killed his girlfriend in a hotel, and everybody knows it happened, and he got away with it. And nobody's ever said, hey, we need to take Jimmy Snuka out of the Hall of Fame, or we can't praise Jimmy Snuka. Like, so it becomes like, well, how much does the media want to pick up on the story? And it is unfair for David Benoit that he can't go be David or Chris Benoit or whatever. But that, you know, Jimmy Snuka got to walk away because it didn't get the attention. So, I mean, like, there is a slippery slope here.
I know. Yeah, I'm still going to say that's quite different, too. Because once somebody gets acquitted from that crime, go ahead and remove him from the Hall of Fame. And
no, he never even got arrested. Like, they quietly made that disappear. And it's like a well-known fact that he beat a woman to death with his hands, probably on a Coke binge, and they just quietly like let it slide, pretended he couldn't speak English and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, that's I don't know the history of it, but if he didn't get convicted of it,
he never got arrested for it.
Are we back at OJ? I don't know. Hey,
look, are we back? So while we
pull the OJ card again,
if the glove doesn't fit,
the OJ card again.
The glove doesn't fit. Okay, you know he didn't do it. That's it.
Oh jeez.
But I think I'm with Ken though. You know, he's gonna have to go to trade school. I mean, seriously, like I don't see how he can do it because he, just the way he talks, you know, he's going to want to homage his father in some way. And once you do that, I mean, you might as well just use the name, and they're not going to use the name. So they're probably not going to let him use the moves. Like, you're not going to see a crippler cross face. You're not going to see him doing a diving well, headbutt.
I still think it's kind of messed up that like WWE has scrubbed all traces of Benoit from, you know, the wrestling history book. You know, it's not like they're editing OJ out of all the Naked Gun movies or anything like that. You know, like
you're looking at, yeah, but you're looking at it from Chris Benoit,
a logical standpoint.
Well, you're looking at Chris Benoit as the victim of wrestling, right? There's real victims here that have died and their families are living with that. This dude shouldn't be continued to be glorified. Like I said, we can have a different approach on how we look at him, but he shouldn't be glorified.
Then why do we feel bad for the soldier that comes home and kills his family and himself?
He also isn't glorified
though.
But he's sympathized.
Like I said, we can show some level of compassion towards, you know, what the facts that we know now that we didn't know at the time. That doesn't mean that we continue to glorify him as a celebrated wrestler.
But why is acknowledging him glorification? Why is it just acknowledging that he existed and he was a part of this organization? Why is that considered glorification? I'm not saying put the dude in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying put dude on the intro reel. I'm saying let his boy go out there and if the fans don't care, let them make that fucking decision and just acknowledge that Chris Benoit existed. It was a fucked up, tragic series of events and life events in that family. And his son wants to bring the family name back to a respectable place by becoming a great wrestler himself. Why should he not be offered that opportunity just based on what his last name is?
I can't I'm with you to the point where I know I said he should go to trade school like Ken did, but it's okay if he's a wrestler, but he cannot use the Benoit name at all because how are the commentators going to talk about him?
That's my point.
You can't bring that up.
Why should it matter what the commentator, if the fans don't care, if the fans are from a different generation, they don't even remember what his dad did. If the older fans that remember what his dad did don't give a shit and he can build a following and he can bring, you know, if he's not a good wrestler, then he's not a good wrestler and he'll
if he uses the Benoit name, I say no. If he doesn't, he can have a shot, but he can't wrestle like his dad. Like he has to be completely different. Like everything about his presentation, his moveset, his entrance, his music, everything would have to be completely different for me to be okay with him being a wrestler. I mean, that's just me personally about
it. I think the one place that it could actually happen is Japan, because it is different there. Like, I don't think it would follow him as much. You know, he would be a little bit more revered, and like, you wouldn't have quite the scrutiny over there. And I'm not saying New Japan. I'm saying like, he could easily be in All Japan or Big Japan or something like that and do his thing. And I don't think it would be quite as hard. Like, there would still be criticism, but it would be easier on just about everybody.
Yeah, but JD, do you think that he's trying to be a wrestler because he's good and wants to be a wrestler, or is he trying to be a wrestler to redeem his father's name?
Honestly, this is my honest opinion. I think he's trying to be a wrestler because I think he's a kid trying. I think he's 27 years old. He's trying to reconcile what his dad did, and you see this a lot in pro wrestling. Is like these kids who never really knew their dads are chasing the specter of the man they never really knew, and the way they do it is to try to follow them into the business. And it's a vicious cycle thing that you see a lot in pro wrestling. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think he's ever going to have a wrestling match. Like, if you look at a picture of David Benoit, you look and go, oh, he looks like his old man, except he doesn't have any muscles. He doesn't look like he works out. He's never trained.
Yeah, so that, to me, that's what should be the ultimate factor in whether he wrestles or not, is can he drive an audience? Can he actually do the moves? Can he be a wrestler? And if those answers are yes, I don't think the fact that his last name is Benoit should be the thing that holds him back.
I think you would get some backlash from the audience too.
Yeah, and you get backlash from people who aren't even fans. Who are? It's publicity. If I'm the business owner, I've got no problem looking dude in the eye and saying, just go away. Like, just go away. Don't come back.
But some indies will book him. And based on this, it wouldn't surprise me if he was getting calls right now, which would be a mistake. Cause like I said, this dude isn't training. Like, he's not actively in a school. Like, it's a bunch of talk. And this is why I don't take this one too seriously, because I think if he was serious, he is the son of Chris Benoit. He could have been training with Lance Storm up in Calgary anytime he wanted to, but it hasn't happened, you know? So I think this is just a guy trying to work through his grief. It's like, yeah, I'm going to wrestle. I'm going to be like my dad. Like, there's a guy named Flying Pillman. His son is currently wrestling, and his gimmick, he's flying, because he actually is Brian Pillman Jr. And he wears a lot of his dad's old gear, and it's very similar, where he's trying to honor his father. Brian Pillman died in a much less tragic circumstances than Chris Benoit. But I mean, Brian Pillman's actually doing it. Brian Pillman's out there busting his ass, you know, trying to become a good professional wrestler, working through his own issues. I don't see it here. So, you know, I don't know. I guess that's what's kind of, to me, it ultimately is, I don't think anything's ever going to happen with it. And I think it's a lot of internet talk.
Yeah. And we're
super deep.
Way deeper on.
we're nerd culture meets society is the theme, you know, like we unpack everything around here. That's how we do it. We unpack it. Where do you see the future of wrestling kind of handling? Do you think that Vince McMahon will eat up the AEW? Do you think he'll end up eating up a New Japan? Or do you think these guys will be able to fight away the Goliath?
New Japan, Scott, I think Scott would probably agree with this. New Japan, no. AEW, the jury's still out.
Yeah.
I mean, Jericho remembers what that WWE money was like.
Well, he's getting paid real well from AEW, so don't shed tears for Chris Jericho. New Japan is taken care of by a company called Bushiroad in Tokyo. There's a lot of money behind New Japan Pro Wrestling. AEW is still so new. Like, they just today got a sweet deal with Turner. They got re-up where they're actually going to get paid a lot more money. So they have a chance to stick around for at least a generation, I think. But as far as the long term goes, I don't know. Hard to say.
I think they'll definitely be around it for at least another 5 years. I think they'll still be on TV in 5 years.
You're calling the under over five?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm definitely saying over five. But now, as far as if they can start competing with like a Raw or SmackDown in the viewership, that's, you know, I don't know. They could stay where they are right now and stay on TV for the next 10 easily. Years. And you know what I mean? And they would be okay.
Yeah.
Now, if we're talking about competing with Raw and SmackDown in viewership, where they're getting 2 to 3 million, you know, 2 to 3 million viewers a week, that I don't know if they can, because it's a very exhausting. And I say that as a good thing, because it is really good matches, but it's very exhausting if you're not used to it. Like, it's something you have to get used to, because it's so high impact and fast paced. And they haven't done as well of a job as I wanted as far as introducing some of the new talent. They've relied a lot on former WWE talent.
Who are some of their best? I think that could hurt them.
Well, I mean, they are some of their best, and there's, you know, that's just kind of how it is. But I think it's very important for them to start really establishing some of these guys who don't have any type of WWE history, like a Sammy. Yeah. Like, he needs to start being established. Darby Allin, who they are working on and doing a good job with, but he needs to start getting wins instead of looking good
both,
and losses.
Yeah, you know, both those guys have really, and again, they're both so young, like. They've both are the stars to come out of this new promotion. Sammy Guevara is a guy who before the summer was just another dude on that roster that nobody had any plans for, who has really become, like, they compare him to a young Eddie Guerrero. And I see it more, the more weeks come by, I'm like, yeah, man, he's got a lot of similarities to Eddie Guerrero. Like, they do this picture in picture thing during the commercials on AEW television. And Sammy Guevara will have these, like, cue cards, basically just written notes, their messages that they're showing at the bottom of the screen. You can pay half attention to them during commercials, and they're hilarious. And Darby Allin's the exact opposite. Like, he's this skater kid who paints his face half a skull, and he's just dark, and girls love him because it's just, he's got this, like, almost Jim Morrison like soul to him, and he throws his body around with reckless abandon. Like, these are both two characters there's nothing like them in WWE, but they have to grow without being the backbone of the company, because you have to let them grow, and the company has to be profitable while it's growing.
Well, in order to fight off the Goliath, you need to have, you know, right, good promotion and things like that. How do you feel the internet age? You know, this is the first time a wrestling company has tried to compete with WWE in kind of like this social media age that we live in. Because, you know, we both said, you know, we went to that ECW Chicago show. I didn't think ECW would get bought out. I thought they would end up being a rival. They had great talent. They were doing something totally original that nobody else was doing. You know, I think the rise of these independents are very similar. One was in, you know, the age of just the internet kind of like starting to take form into its modern, you know, era. And now you have another one coming up in the days of influencers and YouTube and things like that. Do you think that the indie outfits have a better chance to survive because of this social media era, or do you think it'll work against them or just not benefit them at all?
So ECW, pro wrestling is based on the idea of a con, like the mark, the con. It's all, everything is not what it seems to be. It's a great magic trick. ECW's greatest magic trick was convincing people that they were truly independent and that they weren't bankrolled by WWE the entire time. And that's the truth. Vince McMahon was literally cutting checks to Paul Heyman throughout the duration of ECW. So, I mean, like, that is Paul Heyman, the master magician of not letting his fans really know that until the very end. We're in a completely different world now. The rise of the independent rise is solely because of social media. AEW exists because the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega had a successful YouTube show. And that's how they've been able, like, the Young Bucks sell their merchandise because they're good at Twitter. You know, so indie wrestling now it lives and breathes on the internet. And Twitter and Facebook and Instagram are the lifeblood of the current independent wrestling scene. And I'm talking too much, Scott. What do you think?
No, because I mean, everything you're saying is right on point, and that all I could do is just really echo that. The only thing I would add is that I think a big part of why the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega are so popular with the internet and whatnot is because of the work they did in, right, New Japan. You know, I think having that exposure New Japan giving them the platform, and then the Bucks and Kenny Omega using their being the elite YouTube show, you know, it kind of, it really benefited both, because that is how I got introduced to New Japan, was through hearing about Kenny Omega and how this guy was, you know, just tearing it up in New Japan. So I checked him out, and you know, that's the influence of the internet, because you just, you see, you know, whether it's a YouTube video or a GIF, you know, of an incredible spot or something, and you're like, what came after that? You know, then you want to look up the match. Then you want to see the show. Then you want to see the match that came before that leading to the show. Why is this match happening? It opens you just open Pandora's box.
Do you think that shields them from a WWE?
I do. I think, especially, well, New Japan, I think, is they're not going anywhere. They'll be around forever. I don't think there's any shelf life on them. I think AEW is kind of in that same boat, because at this point with AEW, I don't see Cody Rhodes or the Young Bucks ever going to WWE.
They don't have to.
They don't have to. But I think Kenny Omega still might, but that's another conversation. But the Young Bucks, and I don't think they ever will. And so they'll always have – the internet will always love those three. There will always be a fan base that will always support them. So I think they will always be safe, because I don't think the social media age is going anywhere.
It'll evolve, and someone will have to figure out how to evolve with it. But in this era, the Young Bucks were the guys that really, really figured out how to use it. Like, they became millionaires on selling T-shirts, like that they would haul themselves to shows. They would go to their indie shows and sell a ton of merchandise, their own T-shirts, to the point where it paid for their family lifestyle. Now they're with this bigger company, but like, they did it on their own. They're really the example of like that do-it-yourself spirit.
All right. Well, before we wrap today, I at least want to make Scott feel a little uncomfortable.
Here we go.
So I know we're more Marvel over here at the Cantina. It seems that Take a Knee always leans towards the DC end. And with Crisis from Infinite Earth kind of wrapping up, what would you think about all that, Scott? How'd you like it?
Hey, man, I thought that was the best crossover they've had.
Yeah, but that's the cameos. A lot.
Don't set that bar so low for yourself right off the bat.
The first one, the Flash versus Green Arrow, I thought that was pretty good, where they fight each other. That one's not bad. The last one they had with Elseworlds, I enjoyed that one as well. The one before that was okay, because they had Supergirl considered in it, but her episode didn't count. But this, I mean, that's how it was. Like, Barry Allen shows up at like the last, like after the credit shows, and that's when they count that and as
pulls,
part of the
pulls a typical DC.
Yeah. You know,
hey, we just came out with 52 issues, and then we're just going to do something, so none of that shit matters. So thanks for giving us your fucking money.
Right. But this last one was good. Like, the cameos were all really good. At least, you know, to me, they were all really well done. I guess we're just giving out spoilers. Is that okay? Is there like a spoiler alert? Do I get a spoiler?
No, I don't. We don't have those nice keyboard buttons that make sound effects.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. For you 15 people who are
shots fired.
okay, well, spoiler alert. the Flash cameo that happened on the last part, where he met the Ezra Miller, the DCEU version met Grant Gustin, the TV version. That was really cool. I enjoyed their interactions, and I thought they both played off each other really well. So I enjoyed it. I liked what they did. I'm not going to watch the last two episodes of Arrow, since Stephen Amell is not going to be on it. There's no reason to watch that anymore. And I'm probably done with the Arrowverse now that Stephen Amell's gone to be honest with you.
All of it? The whole thing?
Crisis
was your swan song?
Yeah,
that was your swan song?
I might finish Arrow. There's only three episodes left. I can finish Arrow. But yeah, I think I might be done with the Arrowverse until the next crossover next year.
I didn't expect you to say that.
I'm a Stephen Amell guy. Like, he was the reason I watched the Arrowverse anyway. And now that he's gone, I don't want to watch her. I don't like his daughter as it is.
So I say that you guys lean DC because anytime like you need to reference a superhero or of some sort and just like any general kind of like analogy or something like that, you know, you always go to DC characters, you know, like if I was to say, you know, yeah, I needed to get here really fast. I needed to run as fast as, and I left a blank, you would always go, you know, Flash to where I would think Quicksilver or something like that. What is it about DC that always pulls you to like, are you a masochist? is that kind of like your kink? Because you do gravitate towards taking the beating that DC likes to give its fans.
Well, I guess it's more so that I resonate more with a DC character than I do with a Marvel character. Like, I feel like...
How so? Explain yourself.
Well, sir. You know, if I'm going to be honest with you, I consider myself the take-an-e version of Dick Grayson. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you say his name enough. I mean...
In case you didn't know, that's my favorite. That's my favorite comic book character.
I'm willing to put money that you have a Grayson tramp stamp or something tattooed on yourself right now.
No, it's not a tramp stamp. It's right there on my chest, right above my heart. I did name my son Grayson, so I do.
That's why I was staying quiet.
Did you really?
I did. I did name my son Grayson.
First name or middle name?
First name.
First name Grayson, that poor man.
Hey, look, the best part was my wife was like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. She didn't even think about it. And like a week
later, you duped your wife into it too.
About a week later, she was like, so where did you come up with the name Grayson? And I was like,
I don't know what's sadder. I don't know what's sadder, that you named your son Grayson or that your wife obviously doesn't listen to your show.
That's why I have to do my shows after she goes to bed. She's like, if I hear this nonsense, I'm coming down and shutting this whole bad boy down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My wife has never listened to a minute of the show. So.
My wife doesn't listen to my show, either of us shows we do. So,
yeah, none.
She doesn't read my whatsoever. My wife doesn't read my books.
Not one minute.
She is not a fan of my work.
Never even a proofread? Not even.
Oh, no. She wouldn't even entertain this. She's like, I hate. She's told me I do not like your stuff.
My goodness.
But for everybody listening, great. You can pick them up on Amazon.com.
My wife's opinion is shit, so you should go buy that now.
She reads Outlander. If you want to read Outlander stuff, my stuff is not for you. But, like, yeah.
If you're looking for the alternative, the Outlander, yeah. I got
it. Yes, you want to read about some monsters getting, like, fucked up, then you read my stuff. If you want to read about, like, time-traveling Scottish lover people, my wife will tell you
lover
where to go.
People. Oh god, that's great. What is it? Okay, so now we gotta unpack this for the audience. What is it about Dick Grayson, man? Like, what it like?
So it
give us the sales pitch for the Grayson.
It really is that he was the first character that I was ever introduced to. So Uncle Oz, who is my co-host on Take and E from Marvel vs. DC, he introduced me to comics and everything. And the first couple of comics he ever gave me was the Green Arrow Legend of the Iron Fist, I believe it's called. It's a 5-part series. It goes Green Arrow, Robin, Nightwing, Batman, and Green Arrow again. It's with Connor Hawke. And I read that comic and the Nightwing character just caught my eye and I was hooked ever since. So then I went back to the beginning, you know, with him being Robin. And I love the story of how he grew up. And I felt like the character in the comics almost kind of was growing up as I was growing up, just kind of the way my uncle started giving me the comics in order. As I got older, I started reading the older comics. And I guess I just kind of grew up with the character. And when I was younger, I know when I used to get my hair cut, I used to go in and he'd be like, what kind of haircut you want, young man? I'd be like, I want the Dick Grayson cut.
I want the Grayson.
And they would be like, what are you talking about, son? What are you talking about? What is that?
That's not a thing, kid.
What is that? You want to fade?
That's not a thing,
you
kid.
You want to fade or you want to hide? What do you want? I don't know what a Dick Grayson is. What is that? But that, I think that's literally what it was. He was the first one I was introduced to and the first one that really, I really kind of got connected with. And he's always kind of, he's always had evolved enough to where I'm like, okay, that's a nice different take. And when he became Batman, that's probably my least favorite Dick Grayson really? Character until this recent take. Yeah.
Huh.
Cause not because he was bad at it, but because I like him being okay. Nightwing and being his own man. He was a good Batman and they had really good stories, but I like him being his own.
Cause I know character. You've heard me pontificate on my Grant Morrison is the greatest Batman writer ever and how much I love the entire Morrison run. I thought Dick Grayson as Batman was fantastic. It was a nice breath of fresh air with him as Batman and the slightly crazier Damian as Robin. Like I absolutely love those stories.
They had a really good dynamic and I agree. He was a good Batman, but I just, Batman is Batman. Batman is Bruce Wayne. You know what I mean? Like, and I like Dick Grayson as Nightwing. Like I like him being his own man and standing on his own. That's kind of why I like the Titans run he had where he's the leader of a group. And I enjoy that aspect of him because I think that's one of his greater attributes and strengths is just being a leader and kind of being that guy that people can look to.
Especially are you talking like the Wolfman Perez Titans, like the old school Titans run?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the old school Titans.
So what are you going to do when Warner Brothers invokes the Grayson card and shits all over your favorite character as they have with every rendition of every beloved character that they've had so far?
We did get Chris O'Donnell. We did get Chris O'Donnell. So
yeah, they had 30-year-old Chris O'Donnell portraying like an 18-year-old kid stealing motorcycles. You know, the one on Titans isn't bad. Like I think he's done a good job of being Dick Grayson, even though he's much more angrier and darker and violent and just
he said fuck Batman.
Ooh. Like, this guy, they really tried to like make him so anti Batman and so like but he did a good job, the actor. I think whenever they do cast him, I am very concerned about the movie and whatnot. I've said personally I think they need to go the Grayson route and have it just be a spy movie with him being a spy for Batman in Spiral.
Oh yeah, because you know they're just going to roll out the red carpet for your favorite character and do something that they've only been able to do once with one character in their entire existence so far.
I can have hope. I got faith. I got faith. I'm optimistic about it.
That's what puzzles me is what about DC has given you the hope where are you pulling this hope from?
DC.
The animation.
To be a DC fan is all about hope. Like their entire universe is based on the concept of hope. Like that is like you have to be a bit corny to like DC Comics. I say this as a bad unabashed DC Comics fan. You have to like truly believe in like the concept, the fundamental concept of superheroes, and that the right people will do the right things when you need them to be a DC fan. Like DC is the least cynical of the universes. So, I mean, like you got to have hope. That's all you can do because it's hard sometimes.
I'll give you that.
And the animation's so good. And like the stories that they could pull from are so good and can be so easily like put on the big screen. It's almost baffling that they obviously not, right? Like obviously not.
Not that easy.
But you would, I don't see why. Part of the reason why I'm so hopeful, like JD was talking about, was just because I know that there are just good stories waiting to be told. And every now and then you get your Batman Begins, you know. And I personally enjoyed Shazam, the story that they told with me family too. With that. It was a little different from the
Shazam was a great movie.
Yeah, Shazam was
a great movie.
Aquaman was okay, you know.
The Nolan Batman trilogy, you know, it's got its ups and it's got its downs. I will never be a Christian Bale Batman fan ever. You can't sell me on
that. Great Bruce Wayne.
Though. I would say that's the exact same thing. But every time we talk about it is he was a great Bruce Wayne. We just needed somebody else to show the lower half of their jaw.
Yeah, they should have pulled a Darth Vader on him and let him say all the lines and then just overdub James Earl Jones or something on top of him, because that shit was horrible.
I remember the first time I watched that Star Wars and I saw him get a mask and I was like, this is the guy with that voice? This is the guy? That voice was coming out of him?
Just crusty ass white dude. What?
Yeah, what's going on?
One thing does not look like the other.
Because I know I've heard this guy's voice before, and this is not the image I saw.
You think there's any redemption coming with Robert Pattinson? This whole, I mean, they got a big cast of characters coming.
Well,
there.
Take and E just shared a supposed leaked photo of Pattinson.
I did see you guys post that today. And
is that real?
Yeah.
Or is that?
It's all right. No, I don't believe it is.
Hey, you know, I love I love to talk about a nice rumor, and I will say the Lady Gaga shoulder pads. I do see a light kind of on the shoulder pads if you look at it.
Man, I'm telling you, it looks like Lady Gaga designed that batsuit. If that is real,
but it's not the worst thing. Yeah.
Lady Gaga's got some very great functional costumes. She does well.
I mean, well,
she's out there moving and getting it. So.
I didn't even think about it until you said that, and now I can't unsee it.
You can't, because you know it's true. You know it's true. You've seen it at the Grammys. Now it's on the bat.
For those of you who are listening, go check out Take a Knee over on Facebook, and they posted a leaked grainy ass photo that people are claiming is Robert Pattinson.
It's like some grip took a picture of the screen that they were watching at it. It's on.
Listen, I had to take that picture on the run. I took that picture personally, and I had to take it on the run, and that's why it looks like that, okay? Give me a break.
Yeah, I'm not, we've talked about it on our show. I don't have faith for this movie. I'm hoping for the best. I'm expecting the worst. And it's not because of Pattinson, but I feel like they're trying to do way too much.
That's the problem with DC movies, is they try to do way too much in one movie.
I thought it was that they didn't try.
That could be it too. That could be the other end of it right there.
I thought it was that they just didn't try.
Like, okay, that's a good story. That's a good part of a story. Let's just put all that into a movie and film it and go.
I truly believe the people running Warner don't get the DC universe. Like, the people in charge, they don't understand what makes it work. They don't understand why they don't understand why Superman specifically is a good character. They just want to keep remaking Batman Forever, and they just kind of keep changing the paint on it. You know, because they keep trying to shoehorn too many things and not understand what makes the characters function or why they function.
Well, I think I always kind of blame the fact that, like, DC hasn't found their Kevin Feige, right? They haven't found somebody who has this long vision. So they let directors run crazy, and directors want this sensational, crazy movie. They can throw in everything they want to be able to do in
nipples on a bat
in 2.5 hours. And instead of developing it over time, and where you have this rail of, you know, again, Kevin Feige runs all, Robert Downey Jr. was on Joe Rogan's podcast today, and
isn't that what they were trying to do with Snyder?
If it was, he wasn't in the right position to do it as obviously the director who still got his movie chopped, and he ended up having to back away in production and all that other stuff.
But wasn't that the original plan with bringing Snyder on, was that he had an overall vision for where they wanted to take the Justice League properties?
I say that the way DC's screwing it up is that Snyder's too involved, right? As the director, he's trying to create these scenes, he's trying to create these things, instead of somebody in the background who is just laying out the overall timeline and laying out continuity. And
a showrunner, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we say that all the time. Like, they need that showrunner type mentality, this TV type mentality. Because, man, really, a movie is nothing but 2.5 episodes of whatever we're going to binge watch this weekend on Netflix or whatever else. Like, it's just on a bigger screen, but it's the same principles of TV nowadays.
So round table, does the Snyder Cut exist?
Oh, it exists.
No.
Yes.
Oh, it exists.
I agree.
It does not exist in the form that people think a movie exists. A Snyder rough cut
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, there is a film, though.
Technically, there's an unedited version.
He even said it would take another couple million dollars to put the Snyder Cut into like something that could be releasable.
He got that. He might as well drop that in and release that bad boy because people would watch it.
Man, a GoFundMe right now would fund fucking $3 million to finish that.
Absolutely.
You start that right this second.
It would cost way more than $3 million to finish that thing. Like it cost him.
You don't need like
30 to 40 million dollars to finish that thing.
I don't know. I mean, they don't do very good CGI work anyway. They can't remove a mustache. We'll see what the fuck they're going to do here. So,
yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it exists in the form that fans are.
They think that there's this they think that there's a literal finished movie sitting in a vault somewhere on a DVD.
With like a whole new alternate ending and like
with all pristine these finished scenes. Special effects that are just ready to go, and that's not real.
No, that doesn't exist. But that's even Snyder or whatever else they've said that's not where it exists. But there's definitely his unfinished works that has a different story, or at least a different ending to the story.
To me, it's just an urban myth and a fun hashtag. It's to me, release the Snyder Cut's gone the way of Harambe.
I think it's waiting to become a documentary like the Superman Lives was.
Yeah, that could be.
You know, like I think it's just waiting to become you have to make that a documentary at this point because that is something people are interested in. People would watch that on like a Netflix or a Hulu.
Yeah, but
or
like tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist people.
But I'm telling you, people would watch.
There's a story behind that movie, and I think it's probably better than the actual movie.
Absolutely.
Like there's oh, for something sure. happened. Like I want to know. Who was mad at who? I want to know why this didn't work. I want to hear that. Like Superman.
Well,
lives.
Didn't somebody die?
Yeah,
his daughter committed suicide. That's why he had
the. I heard there was a Wizard of Oz munchkin hanging in the back.
Now look. You playing, but on the tape, on the VHS version of the Wizard of Oz.
I had it. Shut
that
up.
Bad boy
I had
is
it.
Hanging in the back.
I had it.
You see him back
I
there.
Took. Man, I'm old enough. I took acid. I hit play when the third lion roared. I did it. I did that shit. I got you.
Man, you see that man waving in the back, and he's done after that. Hey, that's real. Conspiracy theories. Our latest episode on Take a Knee. Plug.
Well, guys, I appreciate the conversation, and I think you can... Scott, you could tell Uncle Oz I contributed about as much to wrestling talk as he did.
No, you contributed. I tell him that you contributed way more than Uncle Oz did. Uncle Oz likes acts absolutely. Like we had talked for like 6 hours. No,
I just sat back with OJ in my pocket, waiting for my window.
he just kept throwing out the OJ card like it
just,
was a
just
draw.
Just trying
four.
To derail the conversation.
Good card.
Okay, this is a good time. Hey, so what about OJ?
But no, definitely appreciate appreciate you guys coming on. We respect what you guys do. Love your shows and continue to be personal fans and hopefully acquaintances at a minimum. Maybe nerd friends.
We might become friends after this. I don't think I took too many punches this time.
No.
Yeah, I just
Steve was baiting
I said,
you. You didn't take it
when I was on. I said it when I was on your show. I said that's my goal is to get like an arch enemy status. I'm trying to be. See, I don't even know enough about DC to make a obscure reference, but I'm trying to be the Doom to your Richards.
I'm with Marvel.
I don't know who Grace. Jason's arch enemy would be other than WB executive producers.
Deathstroke, right?
Yeah. Deathstroke. And the way the comics are going now, it looks like it's going to be the Court of Owls eventually, but I think that's going to end up being one of his big villains the way it's going now.
I mean, Dick Grayson versus the Court of Owls. Let me go spend my $4 right now.
Hey, Court of Owls is good stuff, man.
Hey, there's another great Dick Grayson story waiting to be adapted. For $4, though.
Well, why don't you guys drop your Twitter handles, drop the show names, give a quick promo before we head out of here, and we'll pick up the nerd talk next time.
Well, you can find me, regular Scott, at we Take a Knee Podcast. I'm at Take a Knee for Marvel vs. DC on Twitter. We drop every Sunday. We're on all platforms that you can find your podcast on. And I'm also one half of the Showdown Pro Wrestling podcast with my man JD. And we are going to really start banging out some different things as far as AEW goes and just looking at different perspectives. I'm the WWE guy, as you've probably heard, and he's more of the anti-WWE guy.
I wear that flag proudly. I'm at Superhero Speak. I don't run that. Dave runs that account, but it's a good one. Our show drops every Wednesday. And my personal account, I'm at JD underscore Oliva, O-L-I-V-A. A lot of comic and wrestling takes, nothing serious. If you want to check out my stuff, I'm on Amazon. Just research my name, JD O-L-I-V-A. And all my books are available. If you're interested, I can throw you the free link to Conspiracy Theory so you can check it out, see if you like my stuff.
Great. And hey, if you guys want to interact with them, feel free to reach out to them on Twitter. And you can always join the Nerd Cantina community over at thenerdcantina.com/community. As you'll find them in over there in the Facebook group, poke them in the eye, following the conversation, follow up, and continue any conversations you found interesting.
For real, you guys have a great Facebook channel. I absolutely love it. Like, I got put in there a couple weeks ago, and I have a blast on there. There's so much cool things. It's such an interactive community. You guys are doing a great job with that. It's awesome.
No, I appreciate that. It's definitely a fun place to hang out. Where it's oddly going exactly the way we wanted it to go, which is pretty rare in life.
Is that worrying you, because you know that means something is going to go wrong here?
Yeah, soon. I'm waiting for us to like hit 500 group members and then it just go off the rails with just like some random plebe putting up hentai, and I'm just like getting alerts at 3 a.m. because some dude put up octopus porn in our group, and I gotta moderate this shit now and make it a fucking job. Like, I'm just waiting for that so bad.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, well, if some random, you know, dude with a weird made up name starts putting up hentai porn, I'll come in after your ass.
Well, listen, you know it's not me unless it's a grainy photo, because I take all my photos I post on the run.
All right, well, hey, thanks again, guys.
Always fun, guys. Shooting the shit.
No doubt. Thank you, guys, man.
All right, and we'll talk to you again sometime soon, nerds.